administration meeting.
Okay.
And, excuse me, what's my...
Okay, thank you.
So what we're going to do here is, we're not going to take action, clearly we don't have a quorum. Do you have any, does the legislative administrator have any statement to make on the rules, the adoption of the rules themselves? You all have copies of the rules in front of you.
For the record, Kevin Hayden, legislative administrator. The rules that are in front of you are the standard joint committee rules, and we have passed them to the chief clerk of the House and the secretary of the Senate, and they've both reviewed them and passed them back to us for adoption by the committee.
Okay. Those present, does anyone here want to comment, question of those, even though I cannot take action on them, we're still looking for a quorum. Yes, Senator Ferriero-Williams.
Mr. Chairman, I believe they're also posted on OLIS.
Yes, they are.
So the public could look at the rules.
Okay. So, all right, thank you. Okay, now I'm going to do another little information hearing. I'm going to go to the, have an information session on the appointment to the Oregon State Capital Foundation. Would Jane Cease like to come forward and testify? So what, you understand what we're doing here? We're covering all the subjects, at least, until we get a quorum. Yes.
Good morning,
the Honorable
Mr.
Jane
Co-Chair
Cease. Yes,
and Madam Co-Chair. My name is Jane Cease, and I'm the current chair of the Oregon State Capital Foundation. And we are here this morning to ask you for an appointment of Joan Plank, who is actually already being very active, and she helped organize the big Hello Again party that we had for you in February. She's been around the Capitol for probably 25 or 30 years at ODOT, first at DMV and then in the director's office, and we would love to have her energy on the foundation be official. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions, comments? Yes, Senator Johnson.
Let me disclose just for the record that I have been a member of the Capital Foundation. This is something that's bothered me all through my tenure, is when do we get some fresh faces? And by that, I'm not disparaging Ms. Plank. I've known Ms. Plank 100 years. I would support that nomination. But this building is of interest to others other than insiders. And I don't know how robust the nominating committee is looking for people that might bring a perspective that isn't just folks that have been in and around the building for three decades, but, you know, some historian from Elgin who might have an interest in seeing the building maintained and taken care of and all of the principles that the foundation stands for. I just don't know what the process is to bring forward names, how to get them in the pipeline of consideration, whether or not you're looking for particular sets of people. There used to be an old axiom that when you were looking for board members, it was work, wealth, wisdom, or wallop. And I don't know whether or not you've got criteria for people that you're soliciting to try to infuse a little new energy into the foundation. That's my question.
Mr. Co-Chair, Madam Co-Chair, and Senator Johnson, thank you. That's a really good question. And coincidentally, the chair of the nominating committee, Gary Wilhelm,
how
is sitting behind me to hear it also. There are a couple of things that we've been doing, and we will be coming to this committee whenever your next meeting is after our April meeting with a probably a longer list, and we are looking for energy right now because we have a couple of really active committees, one on the History Gateway and one on the master plan process. And also the other thing that we've been doing is I've been not only asking people to come and be served as, and not waiting to ask, some people come forward on their own, to be officially members, but also I've been asking other people who are interested in one or another of the committees to just serve as a liaison unofficially and to add to the work of that committee. So we appreciate the comments. Thank you very much, and we will try to keep on adding some younger, newer blood.
Doesn't have to be younger.
Oh, okay. Older and younger.
Further comments, questions? Thank you very much. Just so you know, I don't want anybody in the audience to think we don't care. We're rushing things. But at 10:30, the Senate Republicans will go into caucus. The House Democrats are in caucus. I don't know what the House Republicans are doing. The Senate Democrats are doing what they're doing.
I'm here.
Well, that's right. Thank you so much.
House Republicans also in caucus.
The House Republicans are also in caucus. We start the Senate floor at 11 o'clock. So what we're trying to do here is we do not have a quorum. And without a quorum, I'm doing the best I can do what I'm going to do. So, but don't think we're rushing things, but we are. But I tried to explain to you why we're rushing things. So we've taken care of a little the discussion on the rules. We've taken care of appointment. So what I'm going to do now, and this is going to be complete, I'm going to ask that we go to the third item because this is the issue of the Capitol Master Plan and start a discussion there. And when that individual comes forward and starts to talk to us, they're going to get interrupted maybe because as soon as I get a quorum, I got to go back to the first two items and take official action. So I don't want anybody to get offended. So whoever it is that's going to talk on the Capitol Master Plan, please do not come with too much sensitivity today because you're going to get insulted if you do. So please. I would like to go now to a public hearing, so to speak, on the State Capitol Plan, the Capitol Master Plan report, please. Is this Mr. Wilhelms?
Yes, sir. I'd like to invite large and capable staff of our committee, Robert Taylor, the Secretary of the Senate, who is responsible for the drafting of the report, and Obie Rutledge, the reading clerk of the House, who was the actual staffer during the...
Yes, Senator.
Mr. Chairman, is there a sign-up sheet for those who wish to insult the panel?
Okay, here's the deal. We have just been informed. We now have a quorum, so this is perfect timing. So I'd like to go back to the organizational meeting and declare we have a public hearing and a work session underway, and I look for a motion on the proposed committee rules from the co-chair.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the proposed committee rules.
All right. Co-chair Kotick has moved to adopt the proposed rules. There's copies in front of you. Discussion? I realize some of you are just walking in here, you know, we're not trying to take advantage of you, but we are trying to take advantage of you. Is there, all right, no discussion? Is there any objections? Well, then the rules are adopted. Close the public hearing and work session on that. Now move to a public hearing, a possible work session on the Oregon State Capital Foundation appointments. Co-chair Kotick.
Mr. Chair, I move the appointment of Joan Plank to the Oregon State Capital Foundation with the recommendation that she be confirmed.
That motion is now before us. The Honorable James Cease has spoken about this individual. Questions, comments, discussion? Are there any objections? That motion has carried. Close the public hearing work session on that item. Now we can go to the informational meeting on the Oregon Capital Master Plan report. You do not need to worry about being interrupted, but individuals may get up in the middle of your presentation. You should not take that personally and walk out on you. So please, I tried to explain the situation. At least one of you is a veteran of this process and understands what this life is like at this place. So with that, I really look forward to this presentation. Proceed, please.
It will be a test of our sensitivity, Mr. Chairman. We're actually here today, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, to meet our obligation to report to this Legislative Assembly the results of the...
I hate to do this. Did you say who you were? Did you say who you were?
Oh, thank you. Mary Wilhelms, who acted as the chair of the Capital Master Plan Review Committee for the last few months.
Sorry. I didn't mean to do that.
Along with me today are Robert Taylor, the Secretary of the Senate, who was basically responsible for the drafting of the final report, and Obie Rutledge, the reading clerk of the House, who acted as staff for the committee during our 12 meetings, I believe it was, that we had. I'd like to begin today, if you'd allow me to thank you all, thank the legislative leadership for their attention to the whole issue of seismic upgrades to and renovation of the state capitol building. Without your concern and the concern of your predecessors, I fear that this issue would have found its way into the proverbial bottom drawer, wherever that might be. I'd also like to thank the members of the committee. There were 13 of us, four of whom sit on the Legislative Administration Committee, by the way, and the civilians, some of whom are present in the audience today. We did, I believe, have a successful committee, and the work product, I think, is good, and I hope that you will think it's good as well. I also need to acknowledge the work of committee assistant Patsy Wood, who did that job during our meetings. With regard to history of this, some of you are very much aware, and some of you not so much, but there has been a long time discussion of earthquake safety and building renovation needs for this building. We don't need to go back over that, but in 1993, when we had the Scotts Mills earthquake, and it was not a major earthquake, it was a wake-up call, and it did get people talking more about seismic renovation plans for this building. Then in 2005 and 2006, there was a public commission on the Oregon legislature, and they made a recommendation that we should upgrade the building, both in terms of seismic upgrades and modernization for efficiency purposes. In 2007 and 8, the Oregon State Capitol Restoration Project became a reality when we redid the Capitol wings. In 2009, the legislature contracted with a Portland firm, and we ended up with the Capitol Master Plan, which we refer to constantly in this effort. And then in 12 and 13, the Capitol Master Plan Review Committee was appointed by the Legislative Administration Committee at that time to review the Capitol Master Plan, to update it, make recommendations on how to get from point A to the end, and any other recommendations that we might have with regard to the Capitol Master Plan itself. I want to emphasize that the primary concern in this whole project is public safety. It is not building a very nice palace for the legislature or others to work in. It is primarily public safety. Whenever the big one hits us, this building will sustain serious damage. I say will sustain serious damage, if not total destruction. Those who are inside the building at the time are going to be hurt, or they're going to be killed, or they're going to be very, very lucky. Besides the vulnerability to earthquakes, there are other significant life safety concerns that need attention in this building. And yes, the report does suggest some modernization and improvements that do make economic sense while this 75-year-old building is undergoing such major construction work to deal with the other items. During its deliberations, the committee conducted 12 meetings, hearing testimony from subject matter experts. And not only did we review the original Capitol Master Plan, we looked into a cooperative, coordinated, synergistic relationship with the Department of Administrative Services. We looked into dislocation and relocation of Capitol building functions during the project. We looked into concerns of the City of Salem and many, many other impacted entities. We looked into how to oversee the project, how to manage it, and what the timeline would be for the project. And we looked into the economic impact of the project and labor considerations of the project. We looked into funding options, and we looked into public relations concerns, plus some other side issues, but those were the major ones. This report, and you all should have received by now both the full report and the executive summary, is basically a roadmap of how to get from where we are today to completing this project as it's outlined before you. The project is complex, it is disruptive, it is expensive, and it is doable if you follow this timeline or something similar. One of the first early questions, of course, is going to be how much does it cost? Okay, we think it costs around $250 million to do the project the way it's outlined here. We can't give you a guaranteed price, but we'll tell you how we're going to get to a guaranteed maximum price. That funding package included $250,000 early in the reconciliation bill that is going through the process right now, in the 1113 reconciliation bill. And that $250,000 was to do a contract with a certified smart expert that can come back with a plan that we can present again to this legislature in May or June timeframe to ask for the preliminary startup money, or the design phase startup money. But we needed some help, and we're seeking professional advice on how to put that package together so that we can come back and make good sense to you all again later in this session. Approximately 10-15% of the total project cost would be necessary for the design phase and project management. And we need a major part of that 10-15%, but not all, in this session's capital construction budget bill, if that's possible. The design phase would begin as soon as possible after July 1 of this year, if that all comes to pass. The design phase is needed to establish the guaranteed maximum price. And once we have that guaranteed maximum price, then we can tell you exactly how much we think the project's going to cost. It would also establish the design team, and it would designate a project manager so that the project would be underway in the design phase. The bonding request for the total project based on the guaranteed maximum price would occur in the 2015 session, and the total project, including the initial $250,000, would be repaid. That would be repaid to the general fund, but that the total amount of money would be funded through Article 11Q bonds. Now, oversight of the project, I'm not going to go through the detail on the oversight. It's outlined in the recommendations of the committee in recommendations numbers 2 and 3. Our primary concern there was efficiency in oversight of the project and the retention of legislative control of the project. And we would do that through the Legislative Administration Committee and the Legislative Administrator, some of which is a matter of statute, some of which is required by statute. The schedule is contained in Appendix D on page 35 of the report, and it's detailed, and you can see exactly what we're talking about here. And once again, it's a roadmap for successful completion of the project. It requires very close coordination and cooperation with DAS, because as part of the big picture, they would be needing to construct one of the two office buildings that they currently have under planning on the Capitol Mall. The design, one of the really good parts of this project is that the design phase of this project.
Do you wish to ask a question?
I do. You gave us leave to interrupt, and I'm doing so. Having not followed the process as closely of late, when you said that there's a $250 million assumed cost and you just made reference to an office building, perhaps for those of us that have drifted away from the process or people listening that know nothing about it, could you just briefly give an overview of what $250 million buys? Does it include an office building?
It does not include the cost of the office building that we're talking about here. DAS has three projects that I'm aware of, that we became aware of in this process, on the drawing board, so to speak, that they would like to do. One of them is the remodeling of the executive office building, and then they've got plans for buildings on both the gold and the red parking lots on the mall. DAS, and I've had conversations with them, do not plan to come in here aggressively seeking funding for those buildings this session. When I had my conversation with Michael, I said, but you don't mind if we suggest that maybe it would be prudent to put one of those buildings together at this time? And he said, no, feel free. And so that's what we're doing. And the construction of that office building is part of this overall roadmap, because that is where we would suggest that the occupants of the Capitol building move while this building is out of commission. We haven't got to that piece yet, which is going to raise everybody's eyebrows, I believe, because it's going to require the vacation of this building for probably 3.5 years. And that's probably the toughest piece of this to sell. But if we're going to do the project, every expert that we've talked to says you've got to get out of the building. And so it's a tough call, but that's what you're here for, and that's what we're recommending. And frankly, I think it's doable. When you look at it in overall time frame, you say you start in 2015 and you get finished by January 1 of 2019. To me, that doesn't seem like a terribly long period of time. And besides, other states have done this. Oregon's not the first. And we've actually visited one state that did it and had just about... It was a very similar project. That was the state of Utah. Had a very similar project. Idaho vacated their building, but it wasn't for as long. And other states have done it as well. I visited the Virginia Capitol when it was totally down to the concrete or brick or whatever. There was not even any sheetrock or plaster left in the building, and they completely gutted that building, and they were out of there for a long time. So it can be done, and it's a tough call. Anyway, that's maybe I strayed a little bit from the point, but the cost of that office building is not in the $250.
Mr. Chair, one other follow-up. I don't know where in the discussions the question arose about, and I'm going to speak a heresy in some people's opinion, but if life safety is driving the point of a $250 million remodel on top of a remodel that has already occurred, was any serious consideration given to shifting some of the personnel that work in this building to the office building and to use this building for the purposes of the chambers, obviously, but to get a lot of the employees that are permanently here out and situated in a new, modern, a completely safe building and thereby ameliorate some of the costs to redo this building?
Well, Senator, I'm not sure that I can say that we actually looked at it in that way. We looked at what it would cost. We looked at options, one of which was tear this building down and rebuild it. Senator Farioli is very familiar with that suggestion. There was an option to leave this building here and make a museum out of it and build a new Capitol building. There was options to look at where we talked about building office buildings for legislative personnel and so forth. After we discussed those, and I won't say that we went into great depth in all of them, but first of all, economically, don't tell me. I apologize. I thought I had it shut off.
If it's your wife, you better take
no,
it.
No, it's done. I'm sorry. In any event, we looked at these options. And we looked at them primarily from cost, from how much it was going to cost to do each of these things, and it didn't take us long to come to the realization that both politically and cost wise, you're not going to vacate this building, or leave it, become a museum or whatever. The only viable option was to remodel and upgrade this building. Now, as far as moving people out of the building, yeah, we had great discussion about that, especially as it pertains to some of the other entities that are in the building, who are tenants of the building, such as the governor's office and his staff, the secretary of state and their staff, the treasurer and their staff, and so forth. And we had great discussion about that, and I think we've come up with some recommendations there. We did not discuss in any depth moving legislative staff out of this building, because we arrived at an early decision, as I recall, that it would not be prudent for the legislative branch of government to start doing what DAS does. You got your hands full managing the Capitol building. You don't need to be managing a couple of office buildings somewhere else outside of the building. So we thought it was more prudent to keep legislative personnel inside the Capitol building and talk about others that are in this building possibly exiting. I don't know if that's a full answer to your question, Senator, but that's the best I can give you.
Thanks.
Senator Gerard,
yeah, I have a quick question. Is what strength earthquake was used to determine the damage that would be done here? The fault's 100 miles off the Oregon coast. That's going to give us the big one. And we're a fair distance away, so I'm just kind of curious, what strength was this evaluated on?
It's in the report, Senator, and I don't have it committed to memory as far as the magnitudes or the technical term for the two types were a 7.0 magnitude crustal earthquake in the Willamette Valley and an 8.0 magnitude Cascadia subduction zone earthquake. And that's the best I can do for you, Senator. But we do have professionals. We had a professional on the committee who is an earthquake professional who has already submitted a major report to is Mr. Yu here?
No, I say he's right behind you.
There he is. if you need detailed information on that question, Mr. Yu is the man to talk to, because he's already submitted a major report to the legislature on earthquake mitigation. So we did look into that, but anyway, that's the best I can do.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Gary, 5 years ago, Senator Johnson reminded us 5 years ago that we just did an extensive remodeling of the Capitol, the interior. Should this body advance forward in this additional remodel, what would become of the work that's already been done?
You mean the wings, Representative? Well, that work would remain intact. That didn't go for naught. But we would be excavating underneath the wings the same as we would be excavating underneath the entire building in order to do the base isolation project, the earthquake mitigation part of it. And that earthquake mitigation, until the certified smart people get in and really do the engineering work on it, won't just involve putting springs under the building. It's going to involve some interior work, some shear wall work, and other things inside the building as well. But the wings, as I understand it, should not be disturbed other than possibly the parking structure underneath and whatever excavation we have to do underneath the wings to do the base isolation.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Proceed, please. Okay. As many of you are aware, I've already covered a lot of this in our discussion, and I appreciate that. The point being, I think the biggest challenge is going to be to get your minds around, get our minds around being out of the building for some 3.5 years. But once again, I can only call your attention to other states that have done it. And if we build that the office building that we're proposing, and I know it's a big proposal, but if we build that building, it will house all of the functions that are currently in this building, including the Chamber of Commerce, for that period of time. So it would only require one move out and one move back. And that is, to us, a very important piece of this whole project. It's less expensive, it's less disruptive, and it's doable. And pretty much that's what they did in the state of Utah. Mm-hmm. They actually built two, the legislature built two buildings, and they moved into those buildings. It was similar, but it wasn't exactly the same. But in any event, that's the piece that that I'm most concerned about. I want you to know that we're available. Any of us on the committee are available to come and visit with you, and we probably will be coming to visit with you if you can accept us on your schedules about the details of this plan, because it does involve money and it does involve disruption.
Mr. Chair. Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, I would urge you to the document, but it won't do justice to the scope of the project. The sweep of the scope of the project, I got appreciation for only having visited the state capitol in Utah to see a place that where actually the thing that is proposed for this capitol building was done. And let me tell you, they literally lifted that building off the ground. Excavated underneath it, put base isolation equipment in place, vacated the office space in the building while the project was ongoing, built permanent office space on the Capitol campus, and did this whole project in a way that resulted in an earthquake-stable, survivable structure. And, you know, you'll see in the report that you have some choices as to the level of survivability you wish to designate for the building. Is it just the preservation of life that you're interested in? That costs X. Is it a month-long or so period of restoration after an earthquake? That costs X plus. Is it a center of government that remains functioning after a 7 or an 8 earthquake? That costs X plus plus. But to see that project actually haven't been done by a sister state, and hearing the story of the sweep and scope and size of that project, That's what made it real for me. And I hope this committee will devote sufficient time to listen to that story told, because I think that makes it more real for those of us that traveled, Mr. Hayden, Mr. Yu, myself, Mr. Wilhelms, and Mr. Obi, and others who made that trip, I think came away impressed that it is doable. It isn't beyond our scope or capability at all. It cost Utah $200 million, roughly. And you know, we're contemplating something almost identical, given the costs of inflation and the, you know, looking back in time at the beginning of the Utah project. That's how I believe this project, even though it's a massive public works project, is reasonable in cost. There are reasons it would cost as much as it will. So I hope that the committee looks at the document first to get a base understanding of the size of the project, but then that we devote sufficient time to take the walkthrough of what the project is from start to finish. It's a fascinating story and something that we're going to have to get personally invested in if we're going to make the decisions necessary to move forward on the project. It's probably the biggest public works project in Oregon's history, possibly.
Technology.
Senator Beyer, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had the either opportunity or misfortune, I'm not sure which it was, of serving on the committee with Representative Berger and Senator Ferrioli and others. And I say that possible misfortune because I learned all too much about this building, and much of which, if I want to continue serving in here for a while, I really didn't want to know. I'm kind of sitting here with this song ringing in my head, the old reggae song of where do you want to go when the earthquake or volcano blows. One of the things that we learned during the process from the geologists and the engineers is that if we have the one that they've been telling us is going to happen sometime, either tomorrow or 50 years from now, this building absolutely will not stand. Absolutely will not stand. And if people are in it, we're going to have a problem. And I think those of us, and there are a few of us who, actually I think there are three of us here on the dais, who were here in 93 when that very mild earthquake happened. Fortunately, none of us were in the building when it happened. But that one, which we spent quite a bit of money fixing the rotunda on and discovered afterward that even though we all went down to room 50 to have our chamber meetings because they said the annexes or the chambers were not safe, we later discovered that the big guy sitting on top of the building broke all but two of his bolts in that very mild earthquake, and probably if we'd had another one would have landed in our lap. What we did learn during the process was you absolutely do not want to be in the walls of particularly the old Capitol if there is an earthquake, because those panels, those marble panels that are on the wall, weigh anywhere from 2 to 6 tons each. And they will not be held up. They're held up by fairly small copper wires. Basically, they're designed to stand there with gravity. And if you start shaking, gravity will work in a different way, which we won't like very well. So it's a very, I mean, frankly, and I don't want to be over dramatic, but it is a very dangerous building for people to be in if you have a big shake. So I would say that. I think we want to think seriously about that. And the question really becomes, do you want to believe the geologists that we're going to have a large earthquake at some time? And if you do, then you probably want to support this plan. If you don't, then I guess you don't worry about it. The other thing is having gone separately from the other panel to the Utah Capitol and crawled around under that one and seen what they do, you really do need to vacate the building. They literally, when they were doing that, and they showed us pictures and showed us how it was, were driving dump trucks underneath the building. Think about that. That's what they're going to have to do. If you think about having to cut the Capitol entirely loose, pour a new concrete plate under the entire Capitol and put footings under that, and I'm probably saying wrong, Kent, but spring pads or something like that, float pads on, so that the Capitol in an earthquake can move 3 to 4 feet in any direction. That's what basal isolation is. You look at that and say, yeah, I don't think I want to be in this building. So I think it's a significant project. I think it's probably one that the people will want to have done.
Senator Starr?
So as I look, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, as I look at the Appendix D master projected master plan timeline, it does say March 13th, 2013, a $250,000 appropriation in the 11-13 rebalance. I don't know. Was that money? I think we just passed
it's,
that bill.
It's
was
in
that,
there.
It was in there. Okay. That's what I wanted to know.
Representative Berger, please.
Yes. A couple of comments, if I may, as part of the committee. One of the first considerations is, do you do it at all? And that's a legitimate question. We are housed, this wing notwithstanding, in an old building. It's 75 years old, and nothing lasts forever, and it wears out. And so the question is, well, let's build an office building instead of a Capitol building and go about our business in it. That has a cost. Then the question is, what do you do with this building? And it's unsuitable as a museum. If you would, you vacated it because it's dangerous, so you're going to send your kids to it? I don't think that's a logic that Oregonians would appreciate. So then you incur the cost of taking this building down while you replace it with something. Then you get to the point of, okay, this is our capital. It is worth investing in and keeping as our capital, and I think that's where Utah got to right away. There is history here. It is a seat of government. Let's not scrap it. Let's make it usable, and the expense of that is simply in that getting under it and saving it from an earthquake. And that was our whole focus from then on. How would you do that? How would you manage it? And the cost of doing nothing remains. The building could collapse, and we're in a worse pickle. Or doing some halfway renovation of a 75-year-old building. That makes no sense when you know your fundamental problem is underneath it. To just sort of go in and say, well, we'll kind of shore up a little here and shore up a little there and call it good, it does no good when you fundamentally understand that the problem is underneath this building, and if you don't fix the main thing, you're not saving yourself anything by just doing a minor renovation. So that's sort of where the committee went on this and come before you with, this is a historic building, it is worth preserving, and if you're going to preserve it intelligently, solve the main problem, which is the foundation of it.
Two thoughts that came from this discussion. The difference between the Utah project at about $200 million and our proposal, we think, at around $250 million, is largely due to the fact that Utah had a luxury that we do not have. They were able to take their basement or their ground floor and utilize that for the base isolation space and then take the space that they lost in the basement and move it out underground around their building. We cannot do that. We need to rip out the ground floor, go down one more story for the base isolation, and then rebuild the basement. So we're actually constructing a whole, reconstructing a whole floor that they didn't have to worry about. The other item was, I would encourage you, especially when it comes to the questions about finance, and most especially when you talk about finance of that other office building, to talk to Michael Jordan and his folks about how they what they think the numbers are on how they can pay for that building, how they can recover the cost of that building through leases and things like that. It was very interesting and very encouraging to us, but it's not a field that I'm totally familiar with, and I'm not going to speak for DAS or for Michael Jordan, but they were very encouraging about this, so I feel good about that. The ultimate beauty of this whole project is that once we were done with the project, is that Oregonians would have a safe, modern, efficient, beautiful Capitol building that would last for at least another 75 or 100 years. And from a legislator standpoint, this issue would once and for all be behind us instead of us having to stare down both barrels of this project, which is a tough one. So Co-Chair Kotek, Co-Chair Courtney, and members of the committee, appreciate your time today. If you have any further questions, we'd be happy to answer them, either here or whenever you choose. Thank you very much.
So that's all. Do you, Robert, do you wish to speak? Oh, no. Any further questions? Yes.
Thanks, Mr. Co-Chair. I just had one question, and I actually had the opportunity to visit the Houses of Parliament last fall and discovered, to my shock that I didn't know this, that during World War II, apparently the entire House of Commons was destroyed by bombing early in the war and was shut down for the remainder of the war, and the House of Commons had to meet in the House of Lords until sometime in the mid-1950s. I don't know how many Americans actually know that, but it was pretty shocking. So there's certainly projects like this would pale by comparison with a disaster like that. But my question was really about immediate risk and risk mitigation, because some of the things in here are pretty disturbing in terms of just asbestos and lead exposure and fire safety issues. And I'm just curious how we're dealing with mitigating those risks right now, you know, in advance of this project, because some of those incur legal liability. So
Senator Rosenbaum, the I think the answer to those questions can best be obtained from your legislative administrator. There are programs in place to deal with both the legal side and the public safety side of those issues. But they're all very real, and they're not different than, some of them are not different than what we dealt with when we retreated the wings, because we were dealing with a lot of fire safety and electrical issues there, not so much asbestos. But you've got a lot of asbestos, lead paint, and all the other things that you hear about these days in this building, of course. But I think that our folks have very professionally and adequately taken care of that problem, but the problems are not solved. They're pretty much just covered up, or otherwise the safety of the people has been looked after, but we have not solved the problem. We've not gotten rid of the threat.
Senator Farrelly. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Co-Chair. Senator Beyer, I thought, did a really great job with chairing the committee that created the master plan report, but he alluded to knowing stuff about this building that he almost wished he didn't know. I can relate to that, and I think John Berger also. For instance, the predominant design feature in the old Capitol structure is concrete post and beam, and it's filled with a ceramic tile filler and then lath and plaster and marble sheathing. And I asked the architects, you know, after an earthquake, what would that be called? And the answer was rubble. There's very little lateral stability in that style construction, and not very much reinforcement, steel reinforcement. So literally, it will just collapse. So, you know, when you ask about what are the considerations, it's faith-based, put it that way.
Well, yes, Representative Nathanson, please.
Thank you. I would like to talk for just a minute about Recommendation 5, which is the funding. If the committee determines and the legislature determines that there is a problem and that we should do something about it, then we figure out how to pay for it. The recommendation mentions as it's called here, a small initial expenditure in 1113 to begin more detailed planning, a larger expenditure to be bonded for 1315 to complete planning and design, because the sorts of planning and engineering work that had been done already were not sufficiently detailed to know exactly what we were getting into. Oregon still hasn't come through an economic recovery 100%. The nation still hasn't come out the other end of an economic recovery. It's a slow recovery. So my question is, the way the financing was envisioned, how to complete the planning and design and then start funding the actual work, is that pretty much the only option we have in front of us? Is there a way to reduce the amount that's spent on planning and design to do it, to do that in stages? At what point do you say you just have to do this amount? You can't keep breaking it into smaller pieces to spread it out. You just have to do it. Can someone talk about that part of the planning and design funding? Because even though you bond it, someone's paying for it. You start paying off your credit card, if you will.
Well, we consulted Representative with, as you know, you were a very active and appreciated member of the committee. We consulted with Legislative Fiscal. We consulted with the Treasurer's Office on how to best pursue this. And in order, you have to strike a balance. You can piecemeal this thing out for years. Or we tried to figure out a way that we could get it in, get it over with, get it done, get out, and do that efficiently and economically. And that's the plan that you have before you. The actual amount of money that we would need in the first year or the first and second years for the design phase, we have been told can run in the range of 10% to 15%. How you need to parcel that money out on a monthly basis or a quarterly basis and so forth is probably going to, we're probably going to have a better answer for you after we do this initial contract with the certified smart person that's going to help us put that piece together. But the fact remains that if we want to get this done in the most expeditious way, that we're going to need 10 to 15% of the total cost set aside for project design and management. Now, that means that some of it won't be spent until the project is underway, all the way out through 2018. But just exactly how much is needed up front will be more answerable when we come back to you later in the May-June timeframe for that particular appropriation to be included in the capital construction budget. And Representative, I don't know how to give you a better answer than that right now. It's still up in the air, but in general terms, we know that it's 10 to 15% of the total project cost for the upfront money. One point that I didn't make earlier is that this project has shelf life. The preliminary money, the design phase money, if it's appropriated and spent, will not go to waste, because the project, you may have to change the dates on it, and depending upon the economy, you might have to change some cost numbers, but the design phase work will be good on the shelf for years. If you have to, for example, if we do not move forward with the construction of the office building, and that's decided to be the way we want to go, and you have to put that off for 2 years, the design phase still remains viable. But we just change the dates and start 2 years later.
Two questions. The first one is, has a fiscal pro forma been done of the office building? Is there any opportunity for earned revenue out of the office building, or is it strictly government functions that will occur there? And my second question, Mr. Chair, that would help move me in the direction of positively considering this, is the availability of the Marine to help us through the construction oversight. And I'm teasing a little bit. We were very fortunate the last time around to have a buyer's representative in the person of a retired military officer who was, I think, extraordinary in keeping everybody on time, under budget, and marching right along.
Are you referring to the wings, Senator?
I am.
Budget? Yeah, well, we'll get his name.
But as far as the fiscal pro forma of the office building, is there a tenant profile?
I'm sorry, Senator, at this point, I cannot answer that question. I believe that's a question for DAS. You're talking about the office building itself.
You've given us reason to think of this as a campus, and perhaps that's a leap too far on my part. But it seems to me that understanding how the operations will be paid for of a new, I imagine, pretty substantial office building, understanding what the tenant mix would look like, I think are important elements in undertaking at least a portion of a campus-wide renovation and new construction.
Well, I've Senator, I've never looked at it as a campus, but it certainly has, have as a mall, and the mall may be a campus in this case, but and this building would certainly be on the mall. But I believe that, I believe, and I don't want to put words in DAS's mouth, but that that's a question for DAS, and I believe that, that if they don't have that, they could work it up. But I know that they have more than just a desire to build a building. They have have put some thought into plans and scope and so forth. So I think it's a fair question to ask DAS, and it's probably an answer that we all ought to have. But that would have to, I know that the legislature would want that answer before they move forward with the construction of the building. I know that that would be the case.
Senator Johnson, this is Robert Taylor, Secretary of the Senate. And as an observer of the committee's work and as the person who helped write the report, it's my understanding that what DAS has in mind, they have, they lease office space for agencies on the private market in the Salem area. And they believe that they can use bond financing now at favorable rates to build an office building, take those agencies out of those lease spaces, move them into this new office building, and achieve a lot of savings by not paying the lease rate anymore and simply owning this new building and paying for it at favorable bond rates. That's their plan. And DAS can talk to you about the analysis of that plan and how much savings they really achieve in that. For our purposes in the master plan, once we learned that they were thinking of doing that, we thought there would be an opportunity for the legislature to partner with DAS and say, if you are going to build this building now, let us move into it temporarily for 4 years. We can then retrofit the capital once we're done using it as a temporary space. We'll move back into the capital and you relocate your agencies and achieve your savings to help pay for the building.
Thank you. That was helpful.
The other point I wanted to make as somebody who's recently been in the building, I've had that experience where I've learned a lot about this building, and it is scary. And one of the scariest things that I really realized through this most recent round of orientation that we do with members and staff when new people come to the building is we don't have a good answer for new staff and new members about what to do in the event of an earthquake. Because if you say, get under your desks and stay, the building will fall on them and you may die. If we tell them, run out of the building and flee as fast as you can, the marble on the side of the building is attached with pins. It may fall off and crush you, and you may die. So we are in a situation now where, and there's no quick and easy fix to that problem other than spend the money to retrofit the building. And the thing that strikes me about this project is when we had the Scotts Mills earthquake in 1993, 20 years ago, it was a five-phase project to fix the Capitol. And they did one of the five phases, which was to rehab the rotunda. So it's unfinished right now. And this is an opportunity for the legislature to finish that.
I want to thank Representative Nancy Nathanson, Representative Vicky Berger. I want to thank Senator Rebar and Senator Ted Ferrioli, who've worked tirelessly along with you, Chair Wilhelms, and all your staff to put together this report. It's an extraordinary amount of work. I was here in 93. I remember the quake. I was at home when it hit. I remember when I got here, I couldn't get in the building. I had to be escorted in a certain way. And I knew then I was not allowed to get near the House floor for 3 months, and I lived and died in room 50. I remember it well, and that was a small earthquake. There are a few points that haven't really been emphasized today. The earthquake importance has been. The old Capitol is in very bad shape. She's hurting. There are maintenance issues going on every day that aren't publicized. The building is hurting. There are major portions of it are broken down. I'm not going to take you into all of you into a male restroom that I'm familiar with, but there's a urinal that hasn't been usable for years. I don't mean to be that graphic, but that's just symbolic of the old Capitol. She's hurting. She's hurting bad. If nothing else, she needs maintenance. There's another issue here. We are now in an annual session. This legislature needs more room, but more importantly, the public needs more room. This discussion often, this is not our building. We know that. This building belongs to the people, and this building is still the most accessible Capitol building in the nation. How long that can last, I don't know. But this is the people's building. You know, I have this saying, you leave a place, I was taught by my parents, the nuns, you've heard this over, you leave a place better than you found it. Well, the old Capitol, she's worse today than it was in 1981 when I got here, whereas the wings are better. They're better. And so we need more space, but we need to do the maintenance. I'm not even going to begin to talk about the earthquake threat. I cannot tell you. If I had my way, this would have been done 10 years ago. I mean, I feel that strongly about it. This legislature and two legislatures after it need to get this job done, because if they don't, the old building is going to continue to fall apart in a maintenance situation. You're going to run the risk of the earthquake. You've all heard it. We're going to continue to not be as functional as a branch of government as we should be because we don't have the kind of meeting room facilities, staff that we need, and we do need them. So, you know, I know that there is never a right time to do this, and Senator Johnson's right. We decided we needed a clerk of the works. And I remember Terry Merkley, he just got out of my way, and I went after a Marine captain. And I wanted him for one reason, because I love Marines. And every day, he was hated by somebody in that project. He drove that project. It was under budget and on time. And I explained, this is going to be the same way, because I'm going to want a clerk of the works. I think you need a clerk of the works, and that's what I called that captain. And I remember he walked into my office after it was done. He said, Mr. President, mission complete. I said, thank you, Captain, and he walked out. So we can do this. We can do it now, and we must do it. It's the people's building. And I cannot thank the representatives and senators enough who've not only worked tirelessly on this, they have gone to other states on this. And what I like most is there's no Democrat-Republican rural urban in this. This is the people's building. So you know how I feel about this, Gary. You and I have been at this a long, long time. And you were one of the people, when I first came to the legislature, again, we wore different uniforms, you taught me this process. And the one thing you taught me is you got to have patience and you got to keep coming back, and coming back. But the time's now to start really making improvements. So thank you very much for your presentation. I just think I've shown my colors for what it's worth. I'm going to push this as hard as I can until I'm no longer here, either because I'm dead or I'm not in this body anymore, because I think it's something we need to do. So anybody else want to make any comments? Senator Johnson.
I think this discussion emphasizes for me the clarion call for a statewide resiliency plan. We are focused on the people's building and this Capitol right now. But if you go up and down the coast, there are jillions of schools, not jillions, but there are countable schools in the tsunami inundation zone. We keep building in coastal hazard areas. If we're going to get serious about making the state resilient, we ought to have a plan. There are sporadic pockets of that activity all up and down the coast because the imminent threat is there. But we ought to have something that is owned by the state that at least gives hope to communities that there is a statewide understanding of their needs and a phased approach to dealing with it, and the discipline to not keep exacerbating the problem by continuing to build in places that we know are hazards.
Thank you. I think I don't mean to shut us off, but we've got to go to our respective floors, I think. Thank you very much, my fellow senators, my fellow members of the House of Representatives, for being here. I appreciate all your efforts. Thank you. We're now adjourned.
Thank you.